Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 148. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I'm here with Alex Kulafi, Security News Writer. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob. Great to be here.
We are back in Chernobyl, back in the office is the comfy confines of our little podcast studio here in Newton. We made it, man.
Yeah.
We survived RSA.
One might say barely, but we made it.
Yeah, I was a little worn out. Anyone that saw me last week, I was not that I was feeling terrible. I had just a very persistent nagging headache basically the entire week, and I was convinced it was a precursor to some type of like fever or virus, and it wasn't. I was just miserable. You were a trooper. You did RSA and then. You know, went right to another show and just a true soldier.
Thank you. Yeah. My sort of version of your headache was that, you know how like when you get anxious, you can get like a scratchy throat or something,
yeah.
Like your throat will dry out a little bit. That happened to me and I'm like, is this a sore throat? Is this the coronavirus? And then how's my breathing? Is this it fine? And then
you looked fine.
Yeah, so I was. I think I'm fine.
You hit it well, although when you were like, "I'm not feeling great on Monday," I was like, "Let's keep an eye on Alex."
Yeah, I took it.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. You can take a day at home. You don't need to infect the rest of us. No, I kid. The event we should say right off the top here, went off without a
hitch. Yeah.
I think they did pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Lots of hand sanitizer stations.
Lots of hand sanitizers, lots of people washing hands, although I didn't have a single person I met with or saw or just ran into not extend a hand to shake my hand.
Yeah.
Which I didn't, you know, I was fine with. A lot of people wearing masks, a lot of people wearing gloves. I've told this in the office a few times just because I was so skeeved out by it. But I was front row for the opening keynotes Tuesday morning, and there was someone behind me taking pictures who I think was wearing gloves, definitely wearing a mask and wearing gloves, and seemed to be coughing a lot. And I was convinced that I was going to come down with something, but I didn't. I'm okay. We're okay.
Yep.
There's no news about anyone getting sick in the aftermath of this show, which I'm very grateful for and thankful for. I guess in retrospect, you can say RSA, the organizers of the conference, made the right call in keeping it, even though there was that late cancellation. AT&T was the late one, right?
Verizon was pretty late, Verizon too, I think.
So I guess you could say they made the right call, although it looks like if they, you know, sometimes the show is held in March.
Mm-hmm.
I think one year recently it was held in April even. If that was the case, I imagine they would have canceled or postponed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cancellations, man.
There's a lot of cancellations. Not to mention, in San Francisco, while we were there, there was the first Northern California coronavirus of unknown origin.
Yep. Case. Yep. Yeah. That was not great. But hey.
Yeah. Lots of stuff got canceled.
We survived it, and we're back. And yes. We have thoughts about the show.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we should start with some of the big headlines that we wrote about. Because there were some things. There were definitely some takeaways from the show. We wrote several news stories. You, myself, other members of the TechTarget news team helped us out as well, which was great. Anton Gonzalez wrote several stories. Thanks, Anton. Ed Scannell, and then our own security team member Ariel Waldman, new member to the team, provided some coverage from back here, which I love that RSA makes some of these sessions and keynotes available online. It helps. So I don't know, Alex. Do you want to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
You go first.
So. There's one I want to touch on briefly that wasn't part of the outline,
nope,
but I thought was really cool.
Nope.
So Target had not really a keynote, but they had sort of a session where they were talking about their wargaming strategy following the big breach from a few years ago. 2011?
13.
2013
or 14.
I think it was 2013. Okay, I think it was an odd number year.
Okay. Yeah.
And they were talking about their wargaming strategy and how they create real fake news clips and real fake phone calls and real fake or mock emails.
Yep.
Can't really say fake news.
Yep. Injectors, they call them.
Injectors, yeah.
Injects.
But it's amazing that they have this, since they're this big of a company, that they have this production value and they have the will to create these real fake injects. These real injects. I don't know. It's just
real fake. We know what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, they yeah. The detail in that session when, you know, you turned in your article on that, I thought, wow, they're really taking this to the next level. And I was particularly impressed with the buy-in of the executive team on it too. I mean, they were into it. And the speaker, she was, I'm trying to remember her title within the organization, but she was great. She offered a lot of insight into what they did as a team. Real good detail into specific scenarios and war games that they presented to the executive team. I thought it was great that they had the thing that stood out to me was they had a new member of the executive team who like went through one of the processes and wasn't sure if it was like, wait, are we talking about a real thing or?
Well, hadn't been briefed at all on this. So they were like, Aaron Becker, who is the target director, of Enterprise Incident Management, she was talking about how this person was new and hadn't been briefed by the CEO yet.
Yeah.
And she thought that they had just done a really good job on the injects, which they probably had done. But in reality, he just
left out of the loop.
This person hadn't been briefed yet.
Poor
was
guy.
And other people, it seemed like, hadn't necessarily been briefed either. So
it's good to be prepared, whether you know it's coming or not.
No,
that was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you mentioned it.
Yeah. And then the other one I want to touch on is the FBI one that was on Monday, February 24th. $144 million in ransomware payments made by Bitcoin over a six-year period from October 1st, 2013 to November 7th, 2019.
Yes.
$144.35 million. Yep. And that was by Mr. FBI Supervisory Special Agent Joel DiCapua. DiCapua. Yeah.
That was a good talk. I'm glad we got there on Monday in time for some of those sessions in the Emerging Threats day-long seminar. That was really good. Mm-hmm. So
lots of good details in that session. It is available online, so you can see it yourself. The one other thing we want to touch on is the thing from the end of the article, where during the Q&A, someone asked him, "Hey, should ransomware payments be insurable? They are insurable, but should they be?" And he said, "No one wants to pay the ransom actors. I think a lot of companies get insurance now. They say, well, if we are hit by ransomware, we're just going to defer to what our insurance company wants to do. They can say it wasn't their choice to pay the ransom because, like I said, no one wants to pay the ransom. So I think that because ransom payments are insurable, I think it has caused more ransoms to be paid." And this answer and this question struck us so much that we're actually working on follow-up coverage to it now.
Yes.
And we're both very excited about it.
Yes. That comment from him, and there's a lot of people that agree with it, informed a lot of discussions that I had with people, that you had with people at the show, about sort of the state of ransomware and sort of the ethics around paying. And it just a really interesting discussion there. Overall with what's going on. So, yeah, look for that stuff on Search Security.
Yes.
And then also the CrowdStrike thing we should mention, because I thought that you picked up on that, and I know CrowdStrike's founder, he's no longer with CrowdStrike.
Co-founder,
yeah.
I believe.
Dmitry Alperovich, and he just left the company. He was co-founder, and he is moving on to work for a nonprofit, correct?
Yes, an accelerator nonprofit. Yeah.
So he did his usual sort of hacking exposed keynote where he and sometimes I think other members of CrowdStrike, if I remember correctly, get up on stage and they talk about some of the trends that they've seen. They're one of the biggest incident response endpoint security companies out there. Obviously, everyone knows them from the DNC hack, and unfortunately, probably everyone knows them from the numerous conspiracy theories out there about them. But anyway, he talked about the indictment strategies and the conventional wisdom about these indictments from the Department of Justice against foreign adversaries was that what's the point? It doesn't work. These guys we're never going to get them. They're never going to go to jail. We're never going to catch them. We don't have extradition treaties with those countries, China, Russia, Ukraine, whatever. Although I guess Ukraine is a bit different. I guess there's some cooperation there. But the point being is that it's useless. And he said, Alex,
that in the case of China, at least, the indictments have proven to be successful, at least at some level. The main example he gave is the People's Liberation Army Unit 61398, how they basically vanished following its indictment in May 2014. And then the Equifax was another sort of example of this.
I thought that was interesting. Yeah.
He was talking about how he wasn't sure if like maybe they were punished, maybe they got moved to other units, but at the very, very least, it disrupted their operation.
Yep.
And caused them to at least change their strategy or pull things back or something.
Yes.
So because of this disruption, it shows evidence of some success that hadn't necessarily been seen too much in other such operations and indictments.
And other people have talked about this. You know, there have been dips in sort of Chinese nation-state activity or what people suspect is nation-state activity over the years. And some of that has come from, you know, people attributed to, you know, maybe it's the treaty, the Obama, you know, sort of the cyber ceasefire that he struck with the country's president, or, you know, some of the law enforcement action. And it's definitely hard to tell what happened to these individuals. You don't have visibility there. But from, you know, Dimitri's perspective, he's saying, you know, these operations just kind of ceased, like the activity kind of dropped off. And, you know, other areas of the Chinese government, you know, picked up some of this stuff. But at the very least, like you said, it's disrupting them. It's like they're trying to dismantle operations or cover their tracks or whatever. So, you know, hey, not totally useless.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, very good.
It's good to know. Mm-hmm. So that's a positive. Alex, let me tell you about a negative. So this was something that Anton covered for us, and I wasn't expecting this to be I wasn't expecting the news from this one to be good. This was the keynote. Christopher Krebs, he is the director for the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency within DHS, so CISA. And Krebs is pretty well known, not to be confused with Brian Krebs.
Yes.
But Chris Krebs is pretty well known and pretty well respected. And he gave a keynote. And the big takeaway, I think, from this was election security. It's not looking good. So he said, I want to get the quote right here. He said, the American people need to understand that we are taking this seriously and we are engaged on it. He's talking about sort of the documented threats and threat actor activity around U.S. elections in 2020, this year. So not just, you know, past elections, 2018, 2016, but indications and activity that suggests there's going to be additional attacks, intrusions, campaigns, what have you. And he said, you know, we're engaged on it, but, quote, 100% security is not going to be the outcome. I mean, I applaud his honesty because he's right, and saying anything else would be a crock and everybody would know it. But like the way he said it and the way he what he sort of offered around that about guaranteeing election integrity and you need paper ballots and you need to be able to audit vote records and there just there aren't enough systems that have it. It was pretty depressing. It was pretty upsetting. And when you get the feeling that like there's certain people within our government right now that don't have a lot of interest in improving election security, it's that makes it all the worse. So it was like a call to action. So I'm glad he spoke and I'm glad he said what he said. I don't know that it's going to do much good because I'm a pessimist, but there you have it. What else do we have? I guess a quick note about the Huawei panel. Mm-hmm. We should probably talk about that because we mentioned that, and I think on our last podcast about the Huawei indictments and the effect that it would have on the show. And sure enough, the panel did happen. They held it. What day was that? Was that Wednesday? The show's all a blur for me. I think it was Wednesday. And it was a 4-person panel. And it was a keynote session. And it was called How to Reduce Supply Chain Risk, Lessons from Efforts to Block Huawei, which, you know, ostensibly the session was about supply chain risks. How do we protect America? Really, it boiled down to Huawei and the debate around the security risks with the company and the government's ban and the recent indictments and what's going on there. And so Donald Purdy, goes by Andy. He is the chief security officer at Huawei Technologies, was on the panel. You also had Katie Arrington, cyber information security officer of acquisitions for the DOD. You had Bruce Schneier, well-known security researcher, lecturer. And then you had also Catherine Waldron, who is a fellow at a think tank called R Street Institute. And they debated a lot of things, but Arrington and Purdy in particular were going back and forth quite a bit about, you know, Arrington was basically saying, we banned Huawei for a reason, but we can't tell you what it was, but it's a good reason. And Purdy kind of was pushing back on that and got a little heated. I'm not sure that anything really came out of the discussion, mm-hmm. like productive, anything new. I don't think Purdy had a great defense of his company, but I also think that Arrington and the people that generally support the ban and the indictments also did not have a great, like, they didn't offer a great case for why they did this and why it's so important. As Bruce Schneier said, yeah, I mean, backdoors are a problem, but there's probably backdoors in a lot of equipment, including our own. I say that, and he didn't say that, but I'm sure he probably thinks it. He was basically saying 5G infrastructure and just network and telecommunications infrastructure in general, there's a risk there because what if a manufacturer just decides to turn off the equipment and just kill communications? It's like essentially a blackout. So yeah, backdoors are a problem and you can find them, but you know, just having some type of off switch that kills everything is also a huge concern, a bigger concern, as he said. But yeah, I guess so credits Huawei for showing up, mm-hmm. and not backing out. Though it was weird to have them, to have Purdy up there, and I know that's not his job, he's a CISO, but to not say, to not push back more against the indictments and defend the company and kind of go harder at this stuff was a little strange. And similarly, it was strange that, you know, we still don't have any sort of real meat on the bone for why they banned Huawei.
Yeah, so. as we kind of talked about a week or two ago, the whole thing is they probably had to weigh, would it be a worse look for us to show up or to not show up? And they probably made the right decision to show up.
Right. As awkward as the panel was.
Yeah.
Other highlights, other things that stuck out from the show for you, Alex? Anything that you didn't mention, I guess, in the top line news items that and headlines that we've already covered?
I guess the one thing I'll say is that everything off the show floor I really enjoyed. I see that little smirk. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the show floor, but I genuinely mean that, like, I had the opportunity to meet a lot of great analysts, a lot of great experts, a lot of great scientists, other security folks, just a lot of people who in this specific field and probably in plenty of other ways are smarter than either of us.
In virtually all ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was great to talk to some really smart people. And it was great to talk to some people who are just genuinely very excited about this stuff that normally we only get the chance to talk to over the phone and whatnot.
Yeah, it's why for us, as much as I don't like going to I don't like going to big conferences. It's not that big. It's 50,000 people, whatever. It is good to go there and connect with people face to face, have real conversations, and get a sense of what's going on in the industry and what people are seeing. Ask your own questions, and then have them also weigh in on what they're seeing. And it's good.
Yeah.
I'll say for me, one of the highlights, which I haven't written about yet because I'm going to do a little bit more follow up on it, but there was I think we may have mentioned this in a previous podcast, but Target, their new CISO, the CISO that took over Equifax, the CISO who took over after that breach, discussed what they were doing, like the stuff that the company was trying to do to become a leader in cybersecurity. I thought was really interesting, and I didn't write anything on it. I thought it was a really interesting session because one of the things that the security team and the executives there were trying to do was be more open and more communicative with the community in general. And just share sort of lessons learned and get advice and just improve the transparency and improve the outreach and try to let people know where they really screwed up and how to not do what they did. And then also get best practices from other people and other organizations about similar experiences and use that to improve the situation. And there were details in there about the things that they were doing and that was certainly interesting, but I just thought the general change in the company's strategy and what they were doing and how they were doing it was fascinating. It was a good talk. It was like I think that's kind of where the show is going at this point. There wasn't a lot of big headline sessions about new vulnerability research or new attacks or like, oh my God, this zero day, that's more DEF CON and to a lesser degree Black Hat. But they have a lot of big names, important names, important organizations kind of talking, being open about their experiences with breaches, with recovery, with incident response, with trying to improve their situation, their security posture. And I appreciate that. I appreciate the talk. Jamil did a really good talk, and I'm looking forward to more information about what Equifax is doing there because I think there's a pretty interesting story there. So
yeah, anyway. As an opportunity to meet people, it's great.
Yeah.
As an opportunity to see some great panels, it's also great. Where it's not great.
Go. Yes, do it.
The show floor. I've been to some conferences in my life and in my 25 years, and this is the worst show floor I've ever seen.
I mean, that's saying something. So, like, you've been to...
I've been to multiple video game conventions.
Yes, you've been to, and so have I. And, you know, in a former life, I was a video game reporter, and for several years, I went to shows, the same shows, E3 and PAX and stuff like that. And, yeah. So you go first. What set you off about the show floor?
So what bothered me about the show floor was that it was very promotional. Not like, I mean, of course it's promotional, but yep. I mean, like, it was very like street teamy promotional, where like it was free T-shirts, free popcorn,
swag,
swag. It was
gimmicky.
People, they banned booth babes,
yes,
but they were still people there who felt like they were kind of touching the line.
Yeah.
It was just, it felt so grimy to me.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel like there was much of substance.
Yeah.
And it was loud. And, like, I had some interviews that I had to do on the show floor, and they were impossible to hear.
It's hard.
It was just, I didn't enjoy a single moment I was down on that show floor.
Yeah. I don't blame RSA or RSA conference organizers for having a show floor. And they obviously can't control how the marketing departments at those vendors choose to do their booths. But you're right. I felt the same way. Like, this is a little unbecoming of companies that, you know, not to be altruistic and like naive about this, but we're trying to address a serious, serious problem. And we're trying to improve cybersecurity for everyone, basically. And when you're out there kind of like, you know, doing the dog and pony show and hawking stuff and competing for eyeballs in that sort of gimmicky way, it doesn't seem right. And it is an interesting contrast to what most of the major vendors out there, including RSA, have talked about in, you know, the last year or last couple years, which is there's too many vendors, there's too much money, there's too much noise, and there's just too much new point products, and it's too confusing, and it's CISOs and the people buying the stuff, it's just too confusing for them. Well, that show floor is the embodiment of that confusion. It is the living, breathing, pulsating manifestation of that, you know, amount of money and confusion and noise. It's just too hard for people to kind of go through there and figure out what's going on and really get to the value of what they're trying to sell.
Yeah,
you know, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there were plenty of mixers, plenty of panels, plenty of
sure.
opportunities to meet people in a genuine, like, not quiet but more reasonable space. And then there's the sandbox upstairs. And I had heard from someone who I talked to at the show that, like, the upstairs sort of booths where it was the startups and the smaller companies, that's where you got more of the show floor that you wanted to see.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's a shame that you're at a trade show and you want to experience the current state of an industry and you have to work around the show floor in order to do so. Like, It's upsetting.
It's a great point. Yeah, you do. I mean, it's a detractor for the show, for sure, I think. I agree with you. But again, I don't know what the answer is there, and I'm not going to fault RSA or the conference organizers for doing it because I don't know what the alternative is.
I don't know who to blame here.
Yeah. I think it's just sort of it's a byproduct of the amount of money and the competition and just everybody – there's so many vendors and so much startup money and VC money out there, and they're all trying to get their foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
It's hyper competitive. It's just, it is what it is. Who knows? Maybe next year the show will be a little different. I don't know, but I think that's probably wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Well,
I still enjoyed my time there.
Overall, yeah, I think we say it was a productive show and met a lot of interesting people, met a lot of interesting attendees on the shuttle buses. But yeah, it didn't seem any less crowded than in years past. Seemed like there was a lot of folks there, like there always is. I don't know what the official attendance numbers will be. I'm sure some people did not end up going. The city seemed unusually quiet at night, but the show was pretty active and crowded. So glad we made it there. Glad we got out alive, unscathed.
Relatively.
Yeah, all right, okay. Relatively unscathed. And, I think that's it. I think that's a wrap on RSA 2020. Well, at least for the podcast. I mean, I know we have more stories coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And look for those stories. If you are out there on Search Security or you see us on Twitter, more coverage derived from the show will be coming soon. So,
absolutely.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you for going to RSA with me, getting in and out burger, and making it through the show.
Thank you for going to RSA with me, Rob.
Anytime. And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.